You are listening to PTBO Today Live, and I am excited about our next guest, more so than I have been for basically anyone we've talked to since the show launched, Graham. We get the opportunity to go down memory lane a little bit with our good friend Brian Armstrong. For those of you who don't know Brian Armstrong, which isn't many because he is an icon here in the Peterborough area, no doubt about it, but he was somebody who worked with us here as a sales manager during the previous inception of the station when it was Extra 90.5, and just a member of the My Broadcasting Corporation family.
And he was down the street as well, down at King and George, under the Chorus umbrella, too.
Yes, he was. So, first of all, Brian, how's it going? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, guys. I'm pretty sure you two guys, you haven't lost your father yet, from what I remember.
No.
I met Graham's father, and I met your father. But, when you hope to outlive your parents, and you know that this day will come, but you're never prepared for it.
Of course, we're talking about the chief who we found out early in the over the weekend that he had passed away at the age of 90.
90, yeah.
90. Yeah. And, I mean, there's lots of stories. I've been reading a lot of obits from people that have been writing about the chief. I've been hearing stories on the radio, on the TV, of people talking about the chief, and love to get your reactions as well from who you've been hearing from, who you've been talking to as well. But, you know, 90 is certainly a great number, and I'm sure that he enjoyed living each of those 90 years of his life.
Yeah, no, you know, the good thing is that at the end there, he was pretty active right through just a little bit past Christmas before he took ill. And so, I mean, he was still driving his car. He was still visiting Mom where she is in Toronto. And so I think that's the way that you want to go, is quick and as painless as possible, you know.
Graham mentioned something off air, and I think it was a perfect point to hit on. You mentioned my father, Graham's father. Neither of them are famous. So when they pass away...
Mine just has a famous name, Brian Elliott.
Elliott, yeah, not to be confused with the NHLer. But when they pass away, there'll be an opportunity for the family to get a little bit of closure, and you can have your downtime. You're probably watching the Leafs games or whatever. I mean, your dad's name, because he's famous and because he's a Toronto sporting icon... I mean, it's plastered everywhere. Does that make it harder, or does that make it easier and make you feel a little bit more comforted that he was so loved?
It's comforting, and at the same time, too, because you're right. I mean, hey, I knew that when he was going to pass, as did my brothers and sister, that it was going to be newsworthy, but to the scale that it has been, it's been humbling. The number of people that have reached out, and of course, that day, once the announcement was made by the Leafs, we had gathered together at Dad's house where my sister still lives, my two brothers and myself, and all four of us, our phones never stopped dinging or ringing. At the house, we had calls from, Wendell Clark, Boreas Salming, Davey Keon, so some of the guys that had played while he was an employee there and had played with, obviously, Davey. And then through just our own friends going way back. I mean, he lived in Leaside a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there were a lot of friendships there. So it was pretty phenomenal. And the thing about it, too, is that we were trying to reply to everybody that we could. So it was good therapy. I mean, that, you know, I'm still replying to people. So I'm sorry to those that I haven't reached out to yet, but I will.
I'm surprised. I got an immediate response. Then.
I mean, honored now, Brian. Like, I got one fairly quickly. Not David Foote, though. But down there.
I did reply to David, but it was yesterday.
Yeah, he had to wait a little bit.
Listen, I got a question to ask, because and I'm going to try to ask this very carefully, because I don't want to sound morbid by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when Johnny passed, that was, there was a huge celebration of life. I know that you had talked to Mike Davies in the Examiner about that, about how big that that attraction was for Johnny when he passed at the Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah.
When you started to see more and more of your dad's teammates start to pass, did that start to ring in your mind? Because I know for me, I was thinking, wow, I wonder how much longer the Chief has, because all those guys he played with were starting to pass on.
Well, I think that, when you see your parents' friends and they start to outlive everybody, and at the age that he was, every conversation and every visit and, you know, that's the maddening thing about this whole COVID thing is, face to face, I'd really only seen him once since last February. Mm-hmm. We got together at a park and social distance on his birthday in July, and it was just my wife Claire and I. So, but you know, to answer your question, that starts to obviously cross your mind, and I think the final straw was when Eddie passed. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd be the one that was, because he was also a Sudbury boy. So they came up and grew up from the same area. So
we're chatting with Brian Armstrong. He's the son of the Chief George Armstrong, who passed away last weekend at the age of 90. A part of your father's legacy is his nickname, the Chief, somebody who was a member of an indigenous man at a time in which you didn't have a lot of star athletes that were indigenous people. Did he wear that? Was he proud of that? Did that matter to him? Did he think about it at all? Just the impact he was going to have on maybe the next generation of indigenous kids?
He never really talked about it. He was very proud to be indigenous, and it was his mother that was full-blooded indigenous. His dad was Irish. He had seen some things, obviously, before as a child that he reflected upon us a couple of times. So he had seen racism, and I guess experienced it, but, he somehow got over it, I guess. I mean, because it's not something that we talked a lot about. But, you know, he wasn't blind to the fact that, I guess, that he was representing indigenous people. And he was also representing the Toronto Maple Leafs. So it was just in his upbringing and things to be responsible. He was a very responsible man.
Well, I can tell you from my few interactions with the Chief, my first time I can recall off the top of my head was I was working for a Toronto radio station. I was covering a game at St. Michael's Arena. I walk up the stairs, go in the media room, and the Chief is standing there. And because the Chief was the Chief, I stayed away from him. I stayed on the other side of the room from him. I didn't want to talk to him because, to be honest, he scared the crap out of me. I didn't want to talk to him.
He's an imposing figure, yeah.
And, you know, again, I was reading Davies' obit that he wrote in the Peterborough Examiner, Mike Davies did. I did a really good job about talking about his experiences in the media room. And it certainly seemed like he had this walk into a room and he kind of just took the room over sort of figure about himself.
Yeah, he... small crowds, he really could hold court. Obviously, we had seen that at family functions. My brother went to, there was a Marley reunion from, you know, the back in the days when he had coached the Marleys and they won, under his realm, they won two Memorial Cups. And so they had a reunion with the one that I call it. He had an all-star team because they had Gabby Boudreau on the team, the Howell brothers and Big Bob Daly, and the list goes, Tinelli was on that team. The list goes on and on. But anyways, they had a reunion, which my brother Fred had to drag him off to because he was always avoiding these, I guess, you know, even though it was a closed thing, but you know, he was always avoiding stuff like that. But once he got in that room, like my brother Fred said that, you know, again, everybody was just keyed in on the stories and what he had to say. It was amazing, he said.
Speaking of stories, you've shared this story with me personally, and you've shared this story with us, I believe, on the air a time or two, but can you give me the ending of the 1967 Stanley Cup Final and how I'm watching this footage?
He wasn't there. He didn't see it.
Well, here's the thing. I'm sitting there. I'm watching this footage, and oh, there's Brian again. Like, he's popping up there. And I know you had said to me that that was not something that your father wanted to happen because that nowadays, I mean, kids and families, they're everywhere, but that was really not something that would happen back in that era.
No, it broke tradition, that's for sure. And it wasn't anything that was rehearsed. It wasn't anything that I was aware that was going to happen. I was at the game with my mom, and in the old gardens here, we were in the blue seats, and my dad's parents, Fred and Alice, were there. They were in the greens or grays or something like that. And, you know, it was late in the third period, and it was 2-1, and all of a sudden, my grandfather appeared down in the blues at the end of the aisle, waving me to come with him. And so my mom just kind of said, go ahead, go with your grandpa there. And so then we went down, and to get to ice level, you couldn't go down through the seats. So you had to go back into the corridors and down the staircases and so on. And then, you know, by the time we got to ice level and getting into that tunnel between the two benches, the crowd went crazy, and we come running out. We're what's going on? What's going on? And somebody yelled, we've won the cup. We've won the cup. George Armstrong just scored in the empty net. So I have seen that replay thousands and thousands of times, and it's funny because I was at the game, and I actually didn't see it live.
But that the highlight of you and him, actually you and him holding the cup together, how much does that ring fondly in your memory of watching that highlight footage and then still be able to see it to this very day because it's been played over and over and over again?
Oh, well, obviously it was a special moment. You know, as they say, everybody has 15 seconds or something like that of fame, and I guess that was it. you know, because I got dragged towards center ice with my dad, you know, I remember getting the cup from Clarence Campbell and then holding it up, and then my dad saying, okay, you need to leave now and go find grandpa. And then, you know, and the rest of the team was surrounding them. So, you know, the reason I said he wasn't too happy about it was just because he was captain, he never wanted to take advantage that, you know, he was getting something that the rest of the teammates couldn't get. You know, the rest of the teammates wouldn't be able to have their kids on the ice, you know. So that and so that's why, you know, like, he was such a great captain, is always leading by example. He wouldn't tell or do you or tell you to do anything that he wouldn't do himself, you know.
Very cool stuff. Just running down his resume, too. The only Leaf, if I'm not mistaken, who had at least a point in every single one of those Stanley Cup clinching games for the four Stanley Cups there in the 1960s. So he was definitely a clutch player and a money player come playoff time. Did he ever tell you about, you know, some of the hardest competition that he would face? Was there a name or two that he'd ever dissect that said, like, boy, that guy was really an amazing player?
And what Jordan's really asking is, were they all Red Wings?
Yeah. Is there a few of them in there?
Actually, it was a Blackhawk. It was Bobby Hull.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess Bobby Hull was you know, he said that he was fast. And obviously he had that hard shot. I'm sure Gordie Howe at the time would have been a heck of a guy to try to check. But the thing is I think Gordie played right wing, if
yes,
I'm not mistaken.
He did.
And you see, Bobby played left wing. So that would be somebody that Dad would always match up against. So he said, you know, I had to stay a couple of feet ahead of him because he'd go zipping by me if I didn't watch out. He certainly checked him in a different way. You know, he said, I always kind of kept him at the end of my stick. And so he was the hardest guy, he said, you know, that he mentioned that was to check because, you know, right wing against left wing.
Yeah.
Legends Row, obviously a huge, huge honor for your father to be on that. Tell me about, you know, the fact, the legacy that he leaves behind as being a member of this organization, an organization that loves and drives itself on celebrating its past, because really we haven't anything to really celebrate today, but, you know, celebrating its past and its great players that have come through the system.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they've done a very good job of that, and Shanahan, you know, has been wonderful to us as a family. You know, he initiated retiring the jerseys and stuff like that. So, the Leaf organization is a class outfit, and there's you know. He loved, you know, the Maple Leafs, you know. So, you know, through good and bad, he always loved the Maple Leafs and working for them. So, anyways, like, yeah, they've done a really good job in the last few years of recognizing, you know, the past heroes that we've had.
I got to ask you one more story, by the way, before we wrap up, because I know there's another one you told me about the time. Because a lot of people may not know that the Chief actually coached the Leafs for a short stint. He wasn't winning any championships by any stretch of the imagination. But can you tell the story about when he got told that he was no longer the head coach of the organization, but still managed to show up to work?
Well, he signed on to coach the Leafs on an interim basis to help out the Leafs, and that was, you know, Harold Ballard was still running the operation, and Stelic was the general manager, and I guess Harold wanted him to coach the Maple Leafs into the following season. He says, "No, it's not something I want to do." And Harold, got a little upset with him and said, "Okay, well, I guess you're fired, you know, as coach." And so, anyways, Dad spoke to his lawyers and I guess, you know, pointed out to him, says, "Well, you actually have two titles, don't you? You got more than one title. You're also a scout in the organization. You got fired as coach, but no mention about being fired as coach or scout." So he reported to work the next available day and continued to work for the Leafs.
I love that. Brian, yeah. Thank you so much, man. These stories are priceless, and you know that we were thinking about you and your family all through the weekend, and you're still very much a presence here at the studio, even though you haven't been with us for a couple of years. But thanks again for taking the time to chat with us. It's outstanding.